The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the 11th message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, July 27th, 2024.
We're going to continue on in this series that I've been doing now, 11th message in a series entitled Habitat for God and Man. The intent of this series is to try to, one, educate all of you a little bit about some of the physical aspects of the creation that exists upon this earth, those things that were set in motion and provided by God in order to provide a habitat for our lives. Let alone then to provide a context spiritually to understand the antitype of all of these physical things. So hopefully, I have been getting quite a lot of positive feedback from a number of you. If some of you don't appreciate these sermons, you've been silent, or the ones who seem like they've been getting something out of it have let me know, and I appreciate that very much. But so we are looking at everything that's involved in this idea, this concept in the Bible of dwelling places. What does it take to live, let alone to thrive as physical creatures, and not just any creatures on the earth, but in particular human beings, the ones who were created in the image of God? And what are the purposes that God intended for what he requires in order for us to have life, for that life to be sustained, and then what are the spiritual counterparts now in the overall plan of God, which speak to the means by which he is bringing salvation to the whole human race. So we've covered last time, we're getting away now from the critical elements for life, because we've kind of already covered the things that you need in order not to die right away. You know, you got to have air, and you got to have food, and you got to have water, and you've got to have, you know, all of these things. So we're getting now down to the more subtle items, things that are still absolutely required for human existence physically. And yet now, not the things that will kill you right away if you don't have them. So last time, our topic was cleanliness, living in having actually a clean living environment. So you can be dirty and filthy or subjected to filth, and you can still live for a while, but your quality of life will absolutely be degraded, and it will eventually kill you, which is the reason that God actually gave the rules and the guidelines to ancient Israel on how to be clean. It wasn't just ritualistic for the sake of the sacrificial system and all that. There was a physical element to it in order to make them healthier and stronger than the nations around them, many of which were totally ignoring those principles that are real in this physical habitat. So we looked at cleanliness as a requirement for human beings in order to live and to thrive. All right, we're going to cover another one today. Today we're going to talk about the necessity that God created for us to sleep. Now, this is one we all know and understand because we all sleep. And you know what it's like when you can't sleep. So God created these physical bodies to require sleep. It is an absolute requirement for human beings. And if you don't sleep, then you certainly then are put at a major and a serious disadvantage on this earth. You're talking about the robbing of a quality of life, let alone premature death. God made it so that sleep is a physical requirement for these physical beings. And as we're going to see, it's true for almost every creature, human and animal, upon this earth. Fascinating, just to step back, and I don't have all the answers for it. My intent today is just to cover the fact that it is a necessity. It's one of those things that we need, and show you from the Bible. So let's start in Psalm 127, verse 2. Because this is a statement of one of the gifts of God to man. Psalm 127, verse 2 says, "It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows." And a lot of different interpretations of this, but it's basically, it's working hard, in essence, from sun up till late, pursuing all of the things either we have to do or think we have to do, and forsaking our overall health. And yet the admonition here says, for so he, meaning God, giveth us his beloved sleep. So it's a confirmation that sleep is actually a gift to the human family. It's a requirement that you need, and it is something that God then gives. The New Living Translation actually says, for God gives rest to his loved ones. So however you want to interpret it. Sleep is a blessing. It's an absolute requirement. It's needful, and it's a blessing for those who enjoy it. Let me read you a citation from the Worldwide Church of God booklet, 1973, entitled Seven Laws of Radiant Health. Sleep is actually number 5 out of the 7. So it was acknowledged certainly by the church, and it's absolutely true. Here we read, quote, many people, especially students, are inclined to delude themselves with the idea they can drive themselves on in work or play, then, quote, catch up on sleep, quote, later on, and be none the worse for it. Nothing will take the place of regular sleep and rest in its recuperative effects on the human body. And you're going to see, and I'm going to read you a few citations from scientists, sleep experts, or whatever. And what you find is they all acknowledge the absolute physical necessity for sleep and the dire results upon the human body, all of the human systems, when you are deprived of that needful sleep. It is something that God built in to our physical anatomies to absolutely require for health. But this quote from the Seven Laws of Radiant Health says, man can go much longer without food than he can without sleep. Have you ever stopped to think about that? So, I mean, if you have water to drink, and you could probably exist quite a long time on a water diet, but how long can you go without sleep? Man can go much longer without food than he can without sleep. Sleep becomes unbelievably necessary after long periods of sleepiness. Sufficient regular sleep for most adults ranges from 7 to 9 hours each night. This, it says, is definitely not wasted time. It will enable one to be fully alive during his work and play, and to live a longer and fuller life in the end. However, and here's the counter side to it, too much sleep is not a benefit. Rather, it is depressing. It is depressing and causes sluggishness and a state of lethargy. We are warned in Proverbs against oversleeping and laziness. And then it's a reference to Proverbs 24:33 and 34, which we won't turn there, but it says a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So, you know, it's that admonition against laziness. So I'm not really covering that from the standpoint of the ditch on the other side of that road. We are talking about sleep itself and a necessity for in this human habitat. This quote goes on to say, in addition to regular sleep, many physical education and health authorities recommend one or more short periods of rest throughout the day to recharge our worn nerve batteries, meaning taking naps. I find value in that more as I get older. But it says, when the Creator said, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, he was giving a law of health as well as a spiritual principle, which will never grow old. Both physically and mentally, we need to rest every seventh day. And so God gave the Sabbath rest as a great blessing. I'll stop right there and say, however, as I've said to you a number of times, you know, if you're going out of your way on the Sabbath to go to an assembly, if you're where you can meet and fulfill God's command for a holy convocation, that's not total rest. That's not laying around all day on Saturday, you know, in your fuzzy robe and your slippers, is it? So there is work, to keep the Sabbath, there is actually work. There's expending of energy that takes place. And those of you sitting before me right here in Eugene, Oregon, I mean, you've done that and you're all dressed up. And, you know, you've brought food for a potluck meal, and we've done all these things. So it's not been just a total, it's not a lazy day. So in that regard, there must be a blessing element that God built into it, even though you're not totally just sitting on the couch all day. And yet your work, the work and the energy you're expending is in a different direction. It's for the purpose of celebrating before God, which is exactly what we're doing right now in a holy convocation. So you're not sleeping, you're not slumbering. And you're like, if you're like me, at the end of the Sabbath, I'm tired. And especially because this is a work day for me, doing just what I'm doing before you. But it's different. And yet, the sleep that God gives as a blessing and really requires in order for us to have physical health is all built into this. So I don't know the mechanics of it, how it works with the Sabbath rest. It's different because we pull ourselves out of the world. It's more of a mental rest away, when we do it right, from all of the cares and the obligations and the expectations that we have 5 to 6 days of the week otherwise, and we pull ourselves out of that, and when we put ourselves in the right mental frame, even though we're expending energy, we are still rested. So it's there's a spiritual phenomenon that's involved in physical exertion, in essence, God still blesses because of that change in direction and that focus on the Sabbath. But this citation from 1973 goes on to say, thousands of years ago, God knew and enunciated what many men still haven't found out, that in depriving yourself of sufficient sleep and rest, you will accomplish not more, but less in the end. So this is one of those robbing Peter to pay Paul type of a principles to say, well, I can't afford to sleep. I need to burn the midnight oil because I've got all this stuff to get done. But when your body demands sleep, and it does because God made it that way, and now you're going to try and override that because you have certain obligations and things that you have to get done, yet you will find yourself spinning your wheels, because if you sacrifice the need for rest, your body will make you pay, and your brain will be sluggish. I mean, you will not be working at 100% if you're sleep deprived. You just won't. So you can work extra and sacrifice sleep to do it, but there is a price to be paid for then sacrificing sleep. Now I know that's very, very different than the individual who wants to sleep and can't sleep, and that's a whole different thing. And I don't have the solutions, you know, for that. We're going to talk about only what I can give you from the Bible and that which God revealed on the macro principles involved in this. And again, my intent is just to enunciate as a fact that this is something that God built into the physical environment that we have on this earth, and especially as a requirement for human beings. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 12. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 12 says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. So a lot of interesting elements involved in this. Number one, and I think it harkens to what we've heard Mr. Raymond Cole in those sermons, you know, speak about the need. God made us with the need to work. And that's also an element of health. And so here's the principle, comes right from God, that says the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. So those who actually apply themselves in appropriate level of work and activity have a better opportunity to actually sleep better, as opposed to those who are idle. So if you've ever experienced that, where you have better sleep after a hard day's work, that's what this is talking about. Sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, meaning regardless of whether he's poor or not. I would add in this, and I don't think it's the context here, whether you're eating or whether you're fasting. Now, some have a real problem with sleeping when they fast. I don't. I don't know why, but it's like whether I eat or whether I don't, I can go to sleep, and I'll count that as a blessing. It is absolutely a blessing. I don't wake up in the middle of the night and have to have a midnight snack. There's some, maybe many, who do that, or at least have to drink a water. Nope, I don't keep a glass of water by the side of my bed, nothing. And so I count that as a blessing. But this is a contrast here in Ecclesiastes 5. The second part, it says, the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep, meaning you can't buy the ability to sleep. Well, people do it by their drugs and everything else that they do. If they are deprived for whatever reason, need to sleep and can't sleep, and all of these efforts by carnal human beings apart from God, and they're all out there, you know, to entice us. But in principle, what this is saying is, it's like those who are focused in the right direction, so that your labors during the hours when you should be working and exerting yourself in the right way, doing the right things, that sleep is a blessing. And the rich, just because they have money, doesn't mean they are blessed. Not at all. That sleep, as we've already seen, is a blessing from God. Now, I want to contrast this whole thing. This is a human need. It's a physical need. And you know what it's like to try and operate without sleep. And however long you've ever done it, I remember, you know, as a young person, intentionally staying up all night just to see if you can do it. And then what it's like to try and function the next day. Doesn't work very well. But we have to do all of those things. Isaiah 40, verse 28 compares God now as a immortal spirit being. By contrast to human beings, God does not need to sleep. I know it goes without saying, but I just want to make the point. For reason, God put this requirement upon us. One of these major limitations upon human beings that he does not have for himself. Isaiah 40, 28 says, hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the eternal, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary. Now, it doesn't use the word sleep, but isn't that what it's describing? God never gets tired. God never has to recharge his batteries. Because as a spirit being, and this apparently applies to the God family as well as to the angel class of spirit beings. I'm not aware of any direct reference to angels, except that it seems, I'm not aware of any example in the Bible of angels sleeping. If there is, I just don't know about it. I haven't looked for it. But it seems to be something when you're talking about immortal spirit beings, which includes the God family as well as angel class of beings, this is something they don't need to do. In other words, they have an internal dynamo that keeps them charged at all times. It's just not a consideration, but especially for God. God never needs to sleep. He never needs to rest. He never needs a timeout in order to recharge his batteries. And yet, human beings were created that way. We take this whole sleep thing for granted because we've always had it all our lives, right? So we can just assume it and take it for granted and never think about it. But if you back up and think about that, that's a major distinction between God and human beings. And also with all of these other physical creatures that aren't human beings on this earth as well. So an interesting consideration. And when you think about it, now if you get appropriate sleep that your body really needs, again, this article said, 7 to 9 hours? If you sleep that way your entire life, you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping. Think about that. So God made us literally to require 1/3 of our existence alive. In sleep. I just find it interesting. Psalm 121, verse 2. Psalm 121, verse 2. My help cometh from the Eternal, which made heaven and earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Now, yes, I understand this is speaking more poetically about the fact, in this case, God is promising to protect us and to keep us, so he's like the watchman on the wall. not necessarily speaking directly to, you know, his requirement for or against needing sleep, but the analogy certainly is supported by it. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. So physically, he doesn't need to, but he's alert at all times. He conducts his work at all times. If you're one eventually who is born into the God family, you are going, besides becoming immortal and not subject to death, you're also going to be relieved from this need to rest. Can you imagine what an existence would be like when you have maximum energy and power at all times? You never run out of juice and need to recharge in order to get it back. You will be literally like an immortal dynamo with maximum energy and power at all times. We've never experienced that. So I would say that distinction in the God family, it's not only having eternal life, but having eternal energy. Never thought about it before, but literally this relief from the need to sleep means you will have eternal energy as well as eternal life. All right, let me give you a few citations from the scientific world of man. And I think in the end, what you find is that even with all of the knowledge that man has accumulated on the earth today, this whole topic of sleep is still mysterious. No one understands why we need to sleep. Those who look at us as just physical, mechanical beings, you know, with electrical impulses in our brain and all that kind of stuff, it's a reality and everybody knows it and they measure it and they do all these studies. But in the final analysis, they don't know why. They don't know why. But they know it's real. So here's some, as usual, I'm just trying to give you some citations that kind of keep it simple as much as possible. But so I found this one from an online organization called sleepfoundation.org, an article entitled How Sleep Works, Understanding the Science of Sleep. And here's what they say. Studies demonstrate that sleep is incredibly complex and has effects on virtually all systems of the body. I think that's very interesting, and that's in line, too, with what we know and believe that we learned through the Church of God, is that it really affects your health in every capacity, having or not having sleep. And they say that here, has the effects on virtually all systems of the body. Multiple parts of the brain are involved in the processes of producing hormones and chemicals that regulate sleep and wakefulness. While there is much that is still to be learned about the intricacies of how sleep works, yeah, I would say so, and I don't think they'll ever learn what they want to. But again, while there's much that is still to be learned about the intricacies of how sleep works, existing research sheds light on the mechanics of what happens in the brain and body during sleep. This knowledge reveals how sleep is connected to numerous elements of physical, emotional, and mental health, and provides insights about how people can get better sleep. So they've got all their programs for how to sleep better. But I think they're dead on when they say there is a direct connection to all these different aspects of our physical existence. Physical, emotional, and mental health is greatly affected by sleep. And then they ask the question, what happens when you sleep? And some of you know a number of these things already, but just in summary here, they say within a minute after falling asleep, notable changes start to affect both the brain and the body. Body temperature drops, brain activity ramps down, and heart rate and respiration slow as well. Not surprisingly, the body's energy expenditure is lower during sleep. It is important to recognize, they say, though, that what happens during sleep is dynamic. So when you're sleeping, it's not a passive activity for your body at all. They say over the course of one night, you actually progress through multiple sleep cycles, each of which lasts between 70 and 120 minutes, and is composed of separate sleep stages. These sleep stages are fundamental to how sleep works. Now think about this, that man understands scientifically in the context of God creating it. Why did he do it this way? It's really a pretty phenomenal thing. One day, I'm sure there's all kind of aspects to this that we have no clue, and yet also have spiritual ramifications, you know, for reasons. I certainly don't know what they are. I just think it's fascinating because God could have made this however he wanted to, and yet this is what he did. So think about it in that context. So in the next subtopic says, what are the sleep stages? And by the way, when they say in here that these sleep cycles last between 70 and 120 minutes, I read an article years ago that I still, I think it was an airline magazine. I was on board a flight or something at one time, and it actually pinned it down on average to more like 90 minutes. And it advocated then, this particular article was saying, you will feel more rested if you sleep in blocks of 90 minutes. In other words, so 3 hours sleep is better than 4 hours. And 6 hours is better than 6.5 or 7. In other words, so 90 minutes, 3 hours, 4.5, 6, 7.5, 9. So I just remember reading that and thinking, I wonder if that's true. So I started paying attention to my own sleep cycle, and I noticed that it seemed to be true, at least for me. So that I would find that I would wake up more than not with a normal sleep pattern, I would wake up on marks of, you know, that would fall on one of these 90-minute marks. So actually, I then got into a habit, even when I needed to set an alarm clock, especially if, okay, I can't get all the sleep I need tonight, I got to get up and got a work thing or get on an early flight or something, whatever. And instead of maximizing or trying to set an alarm to get every single minute that I can, I would go to the nearest 90-minute mark. So if I can't get 7.5 hours, instead of going for 6.5, I would go for 6. Only because, and I, again, you can, you know, you've got your own experiences. I'm just telling you what my personal experience has been, that this thing about sleep cycles being approximately 90-minute cycles is true for me. And I feel more rested. If I actually wake up after 6 hours, I feel more rested than if I sleep for 6.5, just or 7. So if I can't get 7.5, I target 6 instead. Several decades ago, I remember I first read that and started doing that, and it seems to be true. But here's what this article says. There are 4 stages of sleep divided into 2 categories. The first 3 stages fall into the category of non-REM. Of course, REM, REM stands for rapid eye movement. So we're talking about a category of non-rapid eye movement sleep. The 4th stage is REM sleep. In stage 1, it says you've just dozed off and started transitioning to stage 2, which involves further slowing of activity in the brain and body. It's much easier to be awoken during these early stages of the sleep cycle. Stage 3, it says, is the deepest part of non-REM sleep. In this stage, your muscles and body relax even more, and brain waves show a clear pattern of slowed activity that is markedly different from waking brain activity. It is believed that deep sleep plays an important role in recuperation of the body as well as effective thinking and memory. I believe that's absolutely true and a part of that which God built in. Our need for sleep and the blessing of sleep when we have it. Goes on to say stage 4 is the only stage of REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. During this time, it says brain activity picks up significantly and most of the body except the eyes and breathing muscles experience temporary paralysis. Although dreams can happen during any stage, the most intense dreaming takes place during REM sleep. So this is from all the sleep studies they've done. And, you know, I've seen some of these things, you know, documented. Seems to have validity. It's things that man can measure and figure out, because they can kind of put these probes on people who are sleeping and figure out their brain activity and everything else that's happening. So it's a fascinating thing, again, when you put it in the context of what God created, because this is a creation of God for us. The article goes on to say, how does the body regulate sleep? The body regulates sleep with two key drivers: sleep, wake, homeostasis, and the circadian alerting system. All right, what are those? Sleep, wake, homeostasis. This technical term describes something most of us know implicitly from experience. The longer you're awake, the more you feel a need to sleep. This is because of the homeostatic sleep drive, the body's self-regulating system in which pressure to sleep builds up based on how long you've been awake. This same drive causes you to sleep longer or more deeply after a period of insufficient sleep. So you know what that drive is like, don't you? Of course you do. You have reasons. Either you are awake when you don't want to be awake, or else you need to be awake and you drive yourself to stay awake. And you pay the price, don't you? Because your body increasingly is driving you and screaming at you to sleep. If you've ever had those experiences where you can almost literally fall asleep standing on your feet, then that's what you're experiencing. So God built into our physical makeup this requirement for sleep, and it will build exponentially and drive us to sleep, whether we want to or not. All right, the second of these two, remember we're talking about body regulating sleep in two drivers, so this sleep-wake homeostasis. The second one is the circadian alerting system. It says here, part of your body's biological clock, circadian rhythms, last roughly 24 hours and play a central role in numerous biological processes, including sleep. Light exposure is the biggest influence on circadian rhythms, encouraging wakefulness during the day and sleepiness at night. So this makes me stop and think about, okay, for people who by necessity, let's say, work graveyard shifts, you know, literally where you're awake during the night and then you sleep during the day. I'm wondering, will that exist in the kingdom when Jesus Christ ruling this earth? Probably not, because I think that works absolutely and antithetical to human health. I always thought when I was young that it would be cool to have a job. You know, I worked at night and slept during the day, and I never actually had one of those. But some of you have, and you know by your own experience. And the worst thing in my mind would be if you change it, like you're doing that one schedule during the week for several days, and all of a sudden, like on the weekends, now you're going to flip it, and you're going to try and go normal, and then you got to go back to a graveyard, you know, backward. That would have to be incredibly difficult and probably very detrimental to the body long term. But that's all caught up in what these scientists understand with that they call the circadian alerting system. It has to do with light. Now, I find this absolutely true when it comes to dealing with jet lag. So some of you who have done long trips, especially on airplanes where you literally can go from one side of the earth, and let's say within 10 hours, you can be a third of the way around the globe, which is what our modern flight does. And yet, what happened? What do you experience with your body? Well, some of you, maybe you do better than I do with it. I'm used to it because I do it all the time. I do trips like that probably 6 times a year, where I'm absolutely moving, turning my days and nights, not totally up, in some cases totally upside down, where my night becomes day and day becomes night, or some variation. I'm not even talking about a 3-hour time difference like going across the United States from Pacific time to Eastern time. I don't even count that. I'm talking about 8-hour, 9-hour, 12-hour time differences where you're literally switching your day and night upside down. And one of the methods that I learned years ago, in order to get your body to acclimate to the new place that you're at, if you're in the daylight, get in the sun. In other words, so if you've been flying and it's nighttime at home and your body wants to sleep, but now you're trying to acclimate and it's daytime, if it's daytime and if it's light, get your body in the light, because that will actually help recalibrate your body to the time that you're in. So I always remembered that and always felt that there was some value to it. Now, if you show up at 6:30 in the morning in a foreign country and your body wants to be asleep, but it's daytime, it's really hard not to go find a bed and lay down. So maybe that's, so what I'm describing, maybe this is an element of modern, you know, flight, where we can go that quickly around the earth, and so to the extent that there's a penalty for that, you know, maybe so. Putting your body through that like I do, Mr. Cole used to do it for years and years and years. Maybe there's a long-term curse for that. I don't know. Of course, we do it for the sake of doing the job that we do to serve God's people. In the old days, it wasn't an issue. If it was weeks in order to go across an ocean on a ship, you were naturally acclimating to a time difference in time zones, slowly, as opposed to doing this, you know, all at once within a short period of hours. So I just find when I read these scientific descriptions of this circadian alerting system and the 24-hour body cycle that we all have, it's interesting to me when you test it against some of these things that we put ourselves through. It goes on to say, in addition, a wide range of external factors can influence sleep, wake, homeostasis, and the circadian alerting system. For example, stress or hunger may disrupt your normal process for sleep regulation. Caffeine intake or exposure to light from electronic devices are other examples of how behavioral choices can alter the body's underlying systems for managing sleep. So I've read a number of articles that say, you know, like, don't sleep with your cell phone next to the bed or whatever else. It's like especially if you have a problem with sleep, don't sleep with these electronic devices because it literally could, you know, affect you. I don't do it at home. On the road I do, because I use that cell phone in airplane mode as my alarm clock. And if I need to be awake to catch a flight or to do whatever I'm doing, so that's when I travel, I've got that phone. I have it turned off, meaning I have it in airplane mode, so it's not going to get a call or messages or text or whatever else. It's going to be silent, but I use it for that clock. But at home, I do not. I do not keep the phone next to my bed. I don't know if it probably wouldn't keep me awake. But for some of you that are extra sensitive and you're looking for every possible thing you can do, get rid of the devices. So those they categorized as behavioral choices can have a big impact. So they mentioned caffeine intake. If you're one who cannot metabolize caffeine, then it acts like a drug and it keeps you awake. And some of you, and maybe most, maybe the majority of people, I'm not one of those, by the way. I apparently am one of those that metabolizes caffeine, which means I can drink coffee and go right to sleep. A lot of people can't do that. If you don't metabolize caffeine, then it acts as a drug for you. It doesn't act as a drug for me, but for many it does, which means then it's very, very wise not to drink anything caffeinated after a certain time to give your body a chance to cast off that effect so that you can sleep when you need to sleep. So all of those things are things many of you already understand. This article, sleepfoundation.org, that I'm citing from goes on to say, these multifaceted processes are managed by several parts of the brain, including the hypothalamus, the thalamus, the pineal gland, basal forebrain, the midbrain, the brainstem, the amygdala, and the cerebral cortex. And so if you know your anatomy and all that, which I don't remember all of that from school, but what they're acknowledging is the fact that this issue of sleep affects all these different parts of the human brain. And I'm going to add then, by God's design. They go on to say, the fact that so many parts of the brain are involved in wakefulness and sleep, including the sleep stages, is further demonstration of the biological complexity of sleep. Why did God make this need for sleep and make it so complex? We don't know, but it's a fact and it's a reality. Continuing on, this article says, while even experts haven't reached a consensus explanation for why we sleep, I don't think they'll ever figure that out. God will reveal it at some point. He's the one that made us. Human beings are just experimenting to try and figure it out. While even experts haven't reached a consensus explanation for why we sleep, numerous indicators support the view that it serves an essential biological function. From an evolutionary perspective, and of course that's what all of these scientists are, they believe in evolution. They say the fact that sleep exists in almost all animal species, despite the fact that it creates vulnerability and takes time away from feeding or procreating, is a strong indication that it is fundamental to well-being. So from their, you know, humanistic standpoint, they acknowledge that it's real, you can't deny it, but they don't understand it because according to their evolutionary belief, you know, creatures evolve over time out of necessity for survival. So you would think, if evolution is true, that human beings would have figured out how to get rid of the need to sleep. Because as these scientists recognize, when you're asleep, you're vulnerable. So if you're a creature, you know, and you got your predators or whatever, you're most vulnerable when you're not alert. So you would think if evolution was true, we would have evolved out of the need to sleep for survival. But we haven't. We haven't at all. They go on to say, in humans, sleep appears to be critical to both physical and mental development in babies, children, and young adults. And I've always heard that, and I'm sure you have too. Ones who are very young sleep a whole lot more than those who are older. And especially teenagers and like having growth spurts, it seems to go hand in hand with more sleep. In adults, it says a lack of sleep has been associated with a wide range of negative health consequences, including cardiovascular problems, a weakened immune system, higher risk of obesity and type 2 diabetes, impaired thinking and memory, and mental health problems like depression and anxiety. Isn't that interesting? Very similar to the shorter citation I read you from the Worldwide Church of God in 1973 on radiant health. So isn't it interesting that all of these potential physical anomalies can happen in our bodies if we are deprived of sleep? This article goes on to say, these diverse ramifications of sleep deprivation offer strong support to the view that sleep doesn't have just one biological purpose, but in fact, through its complexity, is an important contributor to the proper functioning of nearly all of the systems of the body. One other article, a shorter citation I want to read, just because it's got a couple of extra things which I thought was valuable. This is from the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School, an article entitled The Science of Sleep, What is Sleep? I'm not sure that they ever answer that, but here's just one paragraph I copied out of it. This article says, in all mammals and many other animals, sleep can be defined in much the same way that we define sleep for humans. However, there are some notable differences among species. So I wanted to give this to you because it really acknowledges the difference between human beings and every other creature that sleeps on this earth that is not human. Here's what it says. When humans sleep, the entire brain is involved. Dolphins and whales, on the other hand, you know, because they're all mammals like we are, so these scientists say, but dolphins and whales, on the other hand, need to maintain consciousness while they sleep so they can occasionally surface to breathe. In these marine mammals, sleep occurs in only one hemisphere of their brain at a time. allowing for some degree of consciousness and vigilance to be maintained at all times. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that? Wouldn't you be able to sleep with one part of your brain and stay on guard with the other? God made us so that we can't do that. None of these creatures in the animal world, in the animal kingdom, absolutely do that. Human beings do not. It goes on to say, concerning increased physiological activity during sleep, for the most part, many physiological activities are reduced during sleep. For example, kidney function slows. Some of you would argue with that. But technically, it says kidney function slows and the production of urine is decreased. However, some physiological processes may be maintained or even increased during sleep. For example, one of the greatest changes induced by sleep is an increase in the release of growth hormone. Certain physiological activities associated with digestion, cell repair, and growth are often created during sleep, suggesting that cell repair and growth may be an important function of sleep. I think that's very likely. All right, so that's some of the physical aspects of what man knows and doesn't know. What are some spiritual considerations here? I'm going to entitle this Sleep and Our State of Mind. What else can we learn from the Bible concerning the impact of sleep? Proverbs 3, I'm going to read verses 19 through 26. Here we read Proverbs 3, verse 19, the eternal by wisdom, and this is the topic, obviously, in the entire book of Proverbs, it's about wisdom. The eternal by wisdom hath founded the earth, by understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the depths are broken up, the clouds drop down the dew. Verse 21, my son, let not them depart. Them what? Again, wisdom. This is an admonition, in essence, to a young person to choose to adopt godly wisdom as a foundation for thinking and acting. That's what the entire book of Proverbs is about. My son, let not them, wisdom and understanding, depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. Verse 22 then tells us the benefits if we do. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. Then shall thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. Verse 24, when thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Isn't that a nice concept? Be not afraid, verse 25, of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it comes. Verse 26, for the eternal shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. Okay, so what? What's my point? This is addressing an orientation of mind that you have an opportunity to have that the world does not. By being called by God and by applying these principles of the way of God under this heading of wisdom and understanding, which is what the laws of God provide for us, we have an opportunity to be blessed by not being controlled, especially by fear. And I guarantee you that if you have peace of mind, and if you can be free from being manipulated by fear and worry and trepidation, you have an increased likelihood of being able to sleep peacefully. I'm not saying there's all kind of other, no, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not even a neurologist, and I can't tell you what other physical things that can cause sleep problems or whatever else. I think these things coming from the Bible, though, have value. And it's the only thing I know to talk about. So here it says, when thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Now, if you're worried, you know, if you're all hepped up because you have concerns and fears and serious considerations that make it so your brain won't shut down, Isn't that often an impediment to sleep? And the trick is like, how do I turn off my brain? I have this habit. Thankfully, I'm going to tell you, it's an incredible blessing to be able to sleep. But every once in a while, I have this happen. I can't turn my brain off. And it seems like it's going 100 miles an hour. And I've said to others, and my method personally is to say, I don't care. How do I get my brain to turn off? I can't fix everything. Now, there are times when I wake up, I don't have this happen often. I wake up in the middle of the night and I have thoughts. I write certain sermons in the middle of the night. They come to my mind and my brain is active, and all of a sudden there's creative processes that happen, and then I get up in the morning and I write it down before I forget it. Then it turns into sermons that you all get. Thankfully, it doesn't happen very much. Most of the time I sleep through the night, and that's a blessing. If I don't sleep, for whatever reason, instead of fretting about it, for me, I say, okay. And then I try to be productive. If I really need to shut down my brain because I desperately need that sleep, I tell myself, I don't care. And I'll just tell it to myself over and over again. Oh, but I'm thinking of this, and what about this, and no. I don't care. So maybe for you, it's counting sheep. Maybe it's, my mother's. She was one of those who would use this methodology where she'd say, start with your toes, and you say, toes, go to sleep. And then you try and relax your toes absolutely completely. And then you move up. Okay, feet, go to sleep. And then ankles go to sleep, and legs go to sleep, and knees go to sleep. And this is one of those things like counting sheep, which is supposed to, if you're concentrating on something like that, before you get very far, you'll drop off to sleep, assuming that, you're not dealing with something, else. But this is about controlling our minds. All these methods, assume you don't have some organic imbalance or some other mental anxiety or fear that's driving you, is a means literally to try to take away your worries. Concentrate your mind away from all of this stuff that is troubling you so that you can sleep. So maybe some of you have found solutions, with certain of these methodologies. Psalm 37 verse 1 says, fret not thyself because of evildoers. So it's just another potential thing that can keep us awake, isn't it? Fretting over whatever. I have this, this obligation, this deadline, this whatever, or somebody is misbehaving and they're making my life difficult, and I, no, and you can just drive yourself to tossing and turning and fretting in bed. So, but God says, fret not thyself because of evildoers. Stop it. Stop it. I'm not saying it's easy to do. But in some cases, the solution to a lot of things in our lives will be to learn to stop fretting. So if you're fretting, that's a habit. You can figure out ways to keep fretting. And one of the serious things that may suffer is your sleep or your ability to sleep. So just take that as a possibility, because these are principles that we're just reading in Proverbs 3, in Proverbs 37. Here's another one, Psalm 4, verse 6 through 8. Psalm 4, verse 6, there be many that say, who will show us any good? That's kind of a depressing outlook. Who will show us any good? Oh, there's nothing good in my life or in this world. Eternal, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in my heart. So this is the individual who is countering this natural pessimism. And there's a lot of reason to be pessimistic by living in this world. But again, here's the individual who can take those exterior influences that they are subject to and compartmentalize it against the blessings that you enjoy by your relationship with God. Thou hast put gladness in my heart, says this fretful individual, more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. So human beings who are physically motivated to be happy and to be glad at certain times, like when they receive money. And so here you're talking about the individual who naturally becomes excited and joyful if they have a good harvest. So they had good income that year and that makes them happy. Yay. But that's being compared to the individual with a close relationship with God who has a chance to carry this gladness with them at all times. Not just at given times when you have something nice happen, but at all times you have an orientation of thankfulness, of appreciation, of gladness. Verse 8, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep. I think it's interesting. In this example, peace and sleep go together, like partners. So yes, if you can't sleep, it robs you of your peace. But if you don't have peace, it robs you of your sleep. It is a duality, and I'm not going to say which comes first, the chicken or the egg, for every individual. But what I'm telling you is, if you're looking for potential solution for a lack of sleep or quality sleep, the thing that you're in absolute control of is your orientation of mind. Why not work on peace? It's fruit of God's Holy Spirit. You have access to it like people in the world do not. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou eternal only makes me dwell in safety. Here's the individual who is not fretful or worried or existing in a state of fear. And I'm not saying there aren't a whole lot of things that are scary in your living environment and in your world. But we're talking about the individual, just like in Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. This is an individual who's subjected to scary things and yet doesn't act upon it the way carnal human beings normally do. And that's because you have access to the Holy Spirit and you have trust and confidence in God. And you're able to lay those things down and to manifest peace. And if you in your mind can manifest peace, you're much more likely also to be able to sleep when you need to sleep. John 14, verse 27. This was one of the promises of God to his disciples, wasn't it? And you're included in this. He said, John 14, 27, peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world gives. No, we're not talking about a human, carnal, worldly peace. They use the word all the time and they don't know what it is. Christ said, let not your heart be troubled. That's really part of the definition of peace. When he says he gives peace to his children, you have an opportunity to have a settled, confident, serene state of mind. And if you do, excluding everything else that might affect our sleep, but if you have that, you are on the track also to be able to enjoy the sweetness of peaceful sleep. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. So fear, inordinate fear, will keep you awake. Agitation, fretfulness, these are all things of the mind that do affect the body. But likewise, it's a circular effect. And I know if you can't sleep, then it leads to more agitation and, in other words, so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So somehow to break the cycle for those who suffer, that's where you ask for God's divine intervention and wait on Him. But there are these things that you can do that are in your control to work on the mind, because the mind and your state of mind has an incredible effect upon your body, and sleep is just one of those areas. All right, last point this afternoon is the spiritual principle that we need to sleep at the right time. Because there's the admonition, and obviously Jesus Christ then used all of these warnings concerning sleeping when we should be awake. Sleep is absolutely necessary, which means you have to sleep. But here's the warning on the other side. Spiritually, there's a great danger in being asleep while one is supposed to be awake. So I'm going to put this whole category in, not sleeping whenever, but sleeping when it's the right time to sleep, which is another part of the way to receive the blessings of God. Mark 13, verse 35, here Christ said, "Watch you therefore," and that's implying wakefulness, alertness, "for you know not when the master of the house comes at even or at midnight or at cock crowing." Now, wait a minute, I am supposed to be sleeping during that. Midnight, I'm supposed to be asleep, right? But now the analogy, he's comparing us to, in essence, a soldier assigned to a watch. And it's our job to be alert at this given time because of the potential of a threat. "Watch you, therefore, you know not when the master of the house comes, at even at midnight, or cock crowing, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping." So forget about the issue of the timing. The analogy here, and Christ is using this as a way to talk about, there's a proper time to be asleep, and there's a proper time to be awake. So spiritually, this whole thing, and again, God's not subject to the need to sleep. God's awake, alert. Full power, full energy at all times. He made us absolutely with the physical need to sleep, which makes us vulnerable. But you have to sleep. You have to spend almost a third of your life in an absolutely vulnerable state because it affects your whole brain, unlike the dolphin or the whale. So God made us that way. But yet, spiritually now, he's talking about a timing of when you're sleeping versus when you're awake. Isaiah 56, verse 10. Again, we're talking about ones who are supposed to be alert because they have a job to do. Isaiah 56, "His watchmen are blind. They are all ignorant. They are all dumb dogs. They cannot bark, sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber." It means a dereliction of duty. The one who's supposed to be alert to warn everybody else when a danger is imminent. And then in that case, sleep is your enemy. Metaphorically. Ephesians 5, verse 14. Ephesians 5, 14 says, "Wherefore he saith, awake, thou that sleepest." Now this is the counter admonition against laziness, against slothfulness. "Awake, thou that sleepeth, and rise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." So here's the spiritual analogy of sleep being against us, robbing us of our ability to apply ourselves to do the work that is required in the service of God. It's not saying never sleep. If you think you can get by on 2 hours of sleep, no, you can't. You are a physical being that God made to require that sleep. But we are talking about sleeping at the appropriate time, and we're talking about then using your wakeful time efficiently to accomplish the work of God. Last text, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 5. 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning in verse 5, you all are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness, therefore let us not sleep as do others. So again, we're talking about being awake during the day, which is the way God intended our bodies to work and to thrive. Sleep at night, be awake during the day. Therefore let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night. They that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation. So using this physical metaphor of sleep and the body's natural need to sleep as a requirement of God, and yet God then using it to teach us something spiritual concerning the need for us to be vigilant, to actually have dominion over ourselves and our time, and certainly then to be using our time wisely to prepare by putting on the mind of Jesus Christ.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the 11th message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, July 27th, 2024.